to MILF Talk, Make Your Life Fabulous. I'm Sophie Venable, psychologist, life coach, mother of two, and author of MILF 101, Make Your Life Fabulous. Whether you're married with children, single, divorced, or all of the above, I'm talking to you about life, relationships, sex, and all that parenting we have to do along the way while we're figuring it all out. Today's topic is weed. Now that it's been legalized in many states for medical and or recreational use, the conversation with our kids is getting a little trickier. Last year, when asked if they had used marijuana in the last month, 6.5% of 8th graders said yes. Among 10th graders, 16.6%, and among 12th graders, 21.2%. Close to 6% of those 12th graders reported daily use. And 81% of 12th graders said that the drug is easy to get. Among 8th graders, 37% said it was easy to get. So in my humble opinion, we need to be having this conversation. I think it's really important. My guest today has joined me before. He's a handsome and well-educated man. I have to mention the good looks because it's equal opportunity objectification here at MILF Talk.
Yes.
And it makes my job more fun. He is the executive director of Alternatives Behavioral Health and a lecturer at UCLA, as well as Cal State Long Beach. He is an addiction expert, both personally and professionally experienced, and he is heavily involved in research and dedicated to exploring holistic treatment options. He's here today to help us talk to our kids about pot, weed, marijuana, whatever you want to call it, and the changing legal and social landscape of it all. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Dr. Adi Jaffe. Love it when you come by.
I love coming by. Thanks for having
me. Because you actually know stuff. So pretty soon.
Really well.
Well, you know, you fake it till you make it.
Yep.
So pretty soon, most of the generation of people that never smoke pot, and I say that with air quotes, they're dying. Yeah. You know, so most of us we're not going to believe a political candidate that says they didn't inhale or at least try it.
Remember the Clinton days?
Right. Remember that?
I know.
God, that was fucking genius, man. This generation of parents, we got a very different situation on our hands. Yes.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I totally agree that we need to have a conversation. I mean, growing up, my parents had zero conversation with me. It was somehow assumed that I was going to navigate the world, walk out there, and either nobody was going to offer me drugs and alcohol, or I was going to magically know what to do when that happened. And they were
wrong. You were just going to somehow say no because they wanted you to say no,
you know,
or whatever. I mean, who even knows what they thought?
We so didn't have a conversation that I don't even know what my parents would have wanted me to do. I literally don't know because my mom drank. My dad never really drank throughout his life, but my mom drank. I know they were both in the 60s and 70s. That's where they grew up. So
right.
They smoked weed at some point. I know they did, but it was never mentioned. There was never a single conversation until they got a call from my attorney that I'd been arrested for selling drugs.
Oh, that's a good time to have a conversation.
Yeah, drugs were never discussed.
When you're
household.
Like scouring the house for cash for the bailout.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, you know, we really need to have a conversation with our kid about drugs.
Yeah, that was the first
yeah.
time.
So, okay.
And that's too late, parents.
Yeah. Let's say, you know, my kids have asked some questions and I've had a conversation with them, age-appropriate conversation, you know, let's say at like, 10 years old, 10, 11 years old or whatever. And now, you know, my one daughter's 15. So I bring it up again and she's like, I know. We already had this conversation, mm-hmm. right? So where do you go from there?
First of all, I think you started what to some people listening probably sounds like a really, really early age, right? 10, 11.
Mm-hmm.
I think the nice thing about starting that early is all kids are anti-drug at that point. So it's an easy conversation to
Interesting.
Have.
Interesting.
Because by the time you get to them at 14, 15, or 16, some of their friends are experimenting and they might be on the fence or they might already be using. So I think starting before use ever happens, and you're right, by 12, 13 is when people start experimenting. So starting before that is probably mm-hmm. a good idea, 10 or 11. That's why we do the surveys on drug use starting at 12 because we know that people start using them. So by having the conversation before that, you are assuring that the person you're having a conversation with is at that point anti-drugs. They hate smoking. They hate drinking.
Mm-hmm.
They look at marijuana as something that they're never going to
experiment with. This is a really good point. This did not occur to me. I think this is just the most brilliant reason to have this conversation when they're 10 because
you're not fighting with them.
You're on the same side and you've now opened the conversation.
So now they know that it's safe. It's something they can talk about. I joke around to all my kids. I teach at UCLA, as you mentioned, and I remind them that they used to all hate drugs and alcohol. I said, you used to throw your parents' cigarettes out the windows. You tell them, I can't believe people use drugs. That's the worst thing ever. You know, those people are dirty or whatever. and look at you now, something has changed in the middle. And again, that doesn't mean that the substances are bad. It just means that we go through this massive transition from the age of about perception. 9 or 10 in our perception of them.
And that's my concern about the perception of weed is that because it's being legalized, right? Which I'll just say it, I'm for legalization. I just think that's like safer for most people concerned, and it's silly to be throwing people in jail over weed. But maybe their behavior on weed, that's like
at least some people.
I think I have a pretty realistic handle on this. But my concern is that because it will be ubiquitous, I mean, it already is practically. Yes. I mean, my daughter actually, one of them, when I had like another conversation with her, she was 13, I think, she had already been offered some mystery candies. And so I'm having this conversation with her because I really want her to know about edibles, because she's starting to go to parties and edibles freak me out because I don't want my kid like paralyzed on the couch. I'm like, you're not going to die, but you may not be able to move. So I need you to call me and I'm going to get you out of there.
Or you may wish you were going
to
die.
Or you may wish you're going to die. Yeah. So, you know, I wanted to explain that to her because, you know, once they start going to parties, it's like, oh my God.
So I think this is a great point to kind of bring up, because even the notion of edible drugs versus smoking it versus drinking something, all those different conversations are things that kids don't come equipped with. And what I tell, and look, I run a treatment center. One of the biggest things that I struggle with half the time with people coming in is we all learned how to use substances. But because the conversation never happened with parents, I learned from 14-year-olds. 14-year-olds don't know shit about using drugs. They have this sense, they're looking for an out-of-body, out-of-mind experience. Mm-hmm. And so they don't understand doses. They don't, none of that. I mean, no 14-year-old kid knows what a dose of alcohol is.
Oh my God. Can you imagine if like a 14-year-old ate an entire brownie from a dispensary? Oh my God.
And their bodies are smaller. So,
I know. That's what I'm thinking. And it's just like, oh my God. Yeah. I'm just having empathy for that kid. Like, that's like the guy who called the 911. They called 911 is like, the cop.
The cop who called 911.
I think I'm dead.
Yeah, I'm dead right now. What makes you think you're dead? Because I'm not in my body. I'm dead. And that was a cop.
I know.
Right? So he's supposed to somehow know better.
Right.
But I think these conversations, what's so smart about them is, look, I don't know why it is that we developed a society where we sort of imagine that these are things, sex and drugs are things that people are supposed to learn on their own. We don't learn math on our own. Like, our kid didn't learn that 2 + 2 = 4.
We didn't ride a bike on our own, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I have to walk behind my kid and balance them on the bike until eventually they can learn how to do it on their own. But somehow, how to procreate or how to consume substances you've never heard of before in measured ways that won't affect you or kill you.
Responsible ways, yeah.
That somehow they're supposed to try on their own. The only reason we assume that is because as parents, we are scared shitless of having the conversation. Mm-hmm. We don't want to talk to them about it. We don't know how to bring it up. Like, how do you bring up to your 10, 11-year-old kids sex? They don't know about it. We want to just be in the dark, and so we don't bring it up. And the same exact thing happens with drugs. I think most parents assume, wrongfully, by the way, that by not bringing the stuff up, their kids will be safe because they won't expose their kids to drugs.
They won't somehow make it okay.
Yeah.
It's sort of like the abstinence-only teaching. Like, if we tell you that condoms work, then that's going to make it okay.
Or if we tell you that sex before marriage is bad, then you just won't have sex.
You just won't have sex. Right. Yeah.
That's how it actually happens. I never had sex until my marriage.
I know.
And you met my wife, so you know that that's true.
Yes, you're pious. I can tell. Okay, so when we drink in front of our kids, I actually generally don't. But it's kind of funny because if I pour a glass of wine, my youngest daughter's like, oh, mommy's so funny when she has a glass of wine. Like, it cracks me up. I'm like, I used to cringe when my mother would pour a glass of wine. Oh, my God. If I just see a bottle of that white Gallo wine, like, I have a visceral response to that. But it's like almost an event if I'm actually going to pour myself a glass of wine, like, on a night when I just have my kids. I just don't drink in front of them. But they know that I drink on the weekends and whatever. So, but I also know, having had a Midwestern dad and, you know, my boyfriend grew up in Michigan, and he'll just have a beer while he's cooking dinner and whatever. And it's very normalized for his kids to, and they'll ask, can I try it? You know, and they want to taste it and stuff like that. And you just go, okay, you don't make it a big deal.
Yeah.
I guess that's the right way to do it. You sort of talk to them about it.
I think in general, just avoid hypocrisy is my big piece of advice.
Okay, I think that's fair.
I You know, I read this thing. The only good research that I've seen about how to have these conversations actually comes from smoking. There's a little difference there because I think we generally agree smoking cigarettes is not good for you. So it's not like anybody really goes around nowadays anyway and says, you know, but I use them at the end of the day and they go well with my steak. And so when you should smoke. So yeah. So there, it's a slightly different conversation around alcohol. But the research that I've seen suggests a couple of things. First of all, have the conversation. That's important. Don't just avoid it. Secondly, have a realistic conversation that doesn't glorify the substance use. Okay. But also doesn't hide it if you're going to consume, because the worst thing to do is tell your kids cigarettes are really, really bad for you. They're going to kill you, and then go smoke one outside, right? In the same way that saying to your kids, alcohol is dangerous. You should never do it. You know, we'll talk about this when you're 21, and then you go drink.
Right.
Because the kids understand that paradoxical conversation you're having with them, and they're going to go with the walk, not the talk, like most of us
right.
do.
If my kid's, you know, at a party or whatever, and, you know, I know she's, you know, getting a ride home with another kid or whatever, I will literally now say to her, are you good? Because I'm going to have a glass of wine and I don't want to drive if you need me to come get you early. Like, is everything okay?
Well, I think the thing about that is a couple of things. First of all, you're letting her know that drinking and driving is bad.
Right.
Because you're making that statement that I don't want to drive if that happens. And secondly, again, we all have different standings on alcohol. So I think trying to figure out what the right stance is for every person listening to this is not going to work, because some people just don't believe that drinking is okay at all. Other people believe that drinking up to three glasses of wine on a night with dinner is okay. Mm-hmm. And others feel like the limit is one. So where you fall is your own thing. Obviously, if you have a history of alcoholism in your family, and especially a deep history, mm-hmm. it's a conversation you want to have, A, with yourself, and B, with your kids, about these are some things you need to kind of look out for, because you know you don't want to end up on that far end of the spectrum. So how do you know? How do you measure whether you're going there or not? But other than that, just have an honest conversation, right? The other thing that is...
So the key is really in the no hypocrisy. Yeah. Like, try to be as transparent as possible, yeah. right? But with weed, does that mean you, like, you know, have a little toke at night in front of your kids? Like,
no. So actually,
that's the part that freaks me out of this.
So I would actually say no.
Okay.
What I would say, though, is don't say to your kid, you know, weed is bad, I've never used it, and I'm never going to, because it's the worst drug ever on the face of the earth, if you smoke weed. Because the problem right. is, what happens if and when they find out? Now, it delegitimizes
all of your
everything.
Credibility it is out the
everything.
Door.
But at the same time, and this is, I think, again, a very important conversation, and why it's important to start this early, 10, 11, instead of later on when you're fighting them on this. We know that drinking and using really all drugs while the brain is developing, so I'm talking up to like the early 20s, mm-hmm. is not the best idea. And the earlier you start, the worse off you are. And there is more than enough research. Nobody needs to do any more research on the fact that delaying the onset, delaying the beginning of drug use is good for
is people. A good idea.
So
okay, so there's no argument there. Period, end. It's better to wait.
There is so much research showing that kids who start earlier have far, far more problems with income, graduating from school, obviously drug and alcohol use, mm-hmm. mental health issues. Oh, I mean, so many different things.
Okay.
So to be able to say to your kids, look, I know there's pressure. Let's have this conversation earlier rather than later. You've got this brain, and this is going to be the thing that's going to get you through the rest of your life. Right now, part of your job is defending that to the best of your ability. And the earlier you start trying and experimenting with these things, the more you interfere with its regular development. Is it going to kill you? Probably not. But at the same time, you know, don't you want to kind of move forward?
Is it going
to
take away your advantages in the world?
It's going to take away some. Mm-hmm. And you don't know which ones. You don't get to have control over that. So when you put these chemicals into your body, they alter the neurochemical environment of your brain. And they're going to change the way your brain develops. And so to have this really honest conversation about, it's not that alcohol is something you have to stay away from for the rest of your life. But know that the earlier you start, the more you put yourself at risk. The same thing with marijuana. The same thing with every other drug. And if you start early, you're building this respect conversation with them, right? Where mm-hmm. it's not about you're a bad person if you try substances, because it's all around them. They see friends that they love and are really good people trying it. So bad people doing drugs, that doesn't really
Yeah, that doesn't fly anymore. I don't think, I just don't think that
I don't think it ever flew.
No, probably not.
Because the kids were experimenting. So they see their other friends who are really good or cool people or whatever. But to have the conversation of, This is about respect for your body and your brain. Mm-hmm. And so,
like nutrition, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And so to, you know, I think that's a really great point to have a more holistic kind of conversation is you're developing right now, right? We know that for boys, let's say you're talking about early to mid 20s development, and for girls normally by the, you know, really late teens, early 20s is when their brain matures fully. Having that honest conversation with them so that they understand part of that responsibility, nobody here I think is suggesting that that will stop them from experimenting with substances if they were going to. But it might reduce the amount of experimentation they do. And again, it might delay it. A 1-2 year delay in the beginning makes all the difference.
So if your kid says, well, I've only tried it once, okay, do you say, who'd you get it from? Or do you just go down the path of, well, that's interesting, what made you decide not to do it again? Or, you know, how'd you like it? Do you talk to them about the experience?
I would probably talk to them. Again, you know, I know there are people listening, and I'm in a safe position right now. I've got a 3- and a 5-year-old, so I don't have to deal with this right now. I'll be back in 8 years, and we'll talk about this again. But I would probably err on the side of having a conversation with them about their experience. And, you know, again, this is what I make a living doing. So I have a lot of information to kind of go along with that.
Sure.
And sort of feed them some information along with that conversation. Mm-hmm. But again, if you're smart like you are and you start the conversation when they're 10 or 11, then by the time they get to 13 or 14 and somebody offers it to them, they already have some information. Versus me,
Maybe
we can talk about my first experience. I was not expecting it at all, either for alcohol or for marijuana, by the way. For marijuana, let's say, because we're talking about that, I joined some friends late at night where there was this – anybody on the East Coast, Perkins? There's kind of like those all-night diners. we had gone out there. We were hanging out, drinking coffee, and eating crappy food. And then everybody went outside, sat around in a circle, and somebody rolled up a joint. And at some point, somebody handed it to me. Everybody knows peer pressure, and – I wasn't going to say no to this new group of friends that I just made in this mm-hmm. new high school I had moved to. So I smoked it. I didn't even really know what I was smoking, to be perfectly honest.
Right. Could have been.
Nobody had talked to me about weed before. But somebody handed me a thing to smoke. I hated that my mom smoked. So, if, you know, it wasn't. It's almost like I gave up control in that moment mm-hmm. of the rest of my life.
Because, easy to do.
Because all these cool kids were handing it to me and I was going to mm-hmm. do it. So if somebody would have had a conversation with me, at least I'd be informed in that moment. And honestly, I don't think anything would have changed if I would have just said, no, I'm good, thank you, and passed it.
Right, right.
Nothing, but in that moment, nobody had ever talked to me about it.
If somebody
before.
Had said, yeah, it'll probably just make you, it makes you really sleepy.
Right.
You know, you might have been like, no, dude, I'm not in the mood for that.
Yeah, or maybe
like, or whatever, you know, like you could have made a choice. You can't make a choice if you're not informed.
Yep. I mean, it's what I tell, obviously the people that I normally see nowadays are people who have developed drug problems. But what I say is awareness is the first step to any of this. I mean, unless you know what is happening, you don't know what to do about it. So having awareness about, hey, if somebody hands you this thing that's rolled up in a cigarette, if now mm-hmm. it's a vape pen or something.
Oh, yeah.
Ask what's in it. Or if somebody gives you a freaking cookie at a party, make sure that you know what's in the cookie, because now kids have to deal with stuff I did not have to deal with.
Oh, my God. I know. And you can't even taste it in a lot of those things. And like I said, my daughter had already been offered. And she's like, Mom, I don't know if they were kidding. I don't know what it was. But like they basically offered her these little apple candies, hard candies or whatever. Well, those are edibles.
Sure.
Just if anybody out there is wondering, edibles can look like anything from cake, Rice Krispie treats, cookies, brownies. Little like Tootsie Roll things, hard candies, soft candies,
bars.
Caramels, candy bars, chocolate. I mean, spaghetti sauce, butter, peanut butter, anything. I mean, anything.
Look, I mean, nowadays THC is concentrated into an oil.
Right.
You put
so
that
it
oil
can
in
be
anything.
Put into anything. And so it's an important conversation to have, if for no other reason that in the same way you don't want your girl or boy plastered drunk at a party and out of control and not able to protect themselves. You don't want to be the one on the couch that's just, you know, laid out flat and having a horrible high and you can't move your body and you can't, you don't have any control. So I think it's important if for no other reason, but edibles, to have this conversation with your kids about, like, look, if you ever ingest anything at a party, because see, it's different than smoking, okay? You can even let them off the hook and say, like, if you ate something and you didn't realize what was in it, and you suddenly feel like really altered and you feel like you just need to lay down and you can't move, call me. I will pick you up. No questions.
Yeah.
Because that can happen. So it happens to grownups. It happened to you.
Yeah. It did.
He was just telling me it happened like at a job.
I literally mistakenly dosed. And you know, you would think I would know better at these clients' houses to sort of ask what every single thing is. But, you know, I didn't.
A cookie on the counter does not seem like how it would be presented.
I love chocolate chip cookies. Now they're ruined forever.
Yeah, so it would be very, very easy for somebody at a party to accidentally ingest something.
And the problem, by the way, for those who don't know and are listening, you know, so when you smoke anything, you get it to hit very, very quickly at very, very small doses, because really it's the amount of oxygen and smoke, let's say, that interacts with your lungs that you can absorb. And as soon as you exhale, it's over. So you're talking about a couple of seconds of exposure and it's done, and you get small doses that affect you quickly. So you can dose yourself a little bit better, or not a little bit, a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
When you eat, the problem is your liver has to process this stuff. And so as it's breaking down the THC, if you eat it at a high dose, you essentially almost kind of like poison yourself by having high doses of THC running through your blood as your liver is trying to clear it over and over and over. So you can get doses that you just cannot get from smoking.
Ugh.
You can get levels of THC in your blood that are essentially virtually impossible to get from smoking. And it takes an hour and a half to hit. So the problem, and I tell my students this all the time, is most kids, especially who've never done this or have never had this conversation, will eat some. And then 45 minutes later, an hour later, say, well, I'm not feeling any of this. Let me take some more. And then maybe they'll smoke some on top of it. And when it all hits, all hell breaks loose. I feel like this has affected you personally.
No, it's just, well, you know, I almost every adult I talk to has that story.
Yeah.
Has that story. It's like, oh, and I thought it wasn't working, so I took some more. And then as soon as I like even swallowed it, boom, I was like way too high. And then I was high for 12 hours. I woke up high the next day, like the whole thing. I mean, it's almost like everybody has one of those stories. The thing that worries me about teenagers is that there is just such easy access to this. All they need is, like, you know, an older sibling or anybody who has a card and that's bringing home bunches of edibles, and they're cheap. They're like, I mean, this is not difficult to get.
But I'm even saying by mistake.
No, but that's what I'm saying. So they have access to them, and they can, and literally people will be just like, hey, you want a fun cookie? And you're like, okay, la la. Fun cookie.
Yeah.
You know, like you didn't even realize.
So we talked about this right before we went on air, but I didn't realize it when I did this by mistake. It only dawned on me the next morning because, you know, I was stoned out of my mind. And I don't smoke. I don't touch weed. So I have zero tolerance. And what I realized later is if you realize that you just did this, go to the bathroom and throw up. I mean, it's the easiest way to get rid of this from your body if you realize it right away. Two hours later, not going to help you all that much. But if you eat a
hard candy, that's not really going to, I guess it could help.
It sits in your stomach and it absorbs through your stomach lining and then eventually it goes through your GI tract. So if you get rid of it sooner rather than later.
But then you'd have to know. You'd have to start realizing that before you got high. So we should wrap this up. But really, The takeaway is talk to your kids, have the conversation, learn what you can so that you know what you're talking about, right? When you're talking
to them. Because, by the way, most people listening to this, you have no idea what kids have access to nowadays unless you are a regular smoker yourself. You've got to study this
I know they've got access to all kinds of things. And you can check out one of our earlier podcasts on that. I think we talked about access. And try not to be a hypocrite. Right?
I think that's a
transparent,
general good rule.
General. Yeah, I think, well, I do think people think they're protecting their kids because the logic is, okay, you smoke pot and here now you have this nice house and car and you're fine. And so they think that if they give that message that the kid's going to be like, I'm just going to go do a bunch of bong loads every day. And I really think that ultimately it comes down to what you said, which is, let's talk about self-care. Let's talk about valuing your brain, valuing your life, valuing your future, right? And just on every level, whether it's, you know, nutrition or drugs or anything, like giving yourself the best shot.
Yeah.
Right. Like, no, it's not. We all know it's not going to kill you to have a glass of wine.
Right.
OK, but let's talk about the responsibility in having a glass of wine.
Yep.
Right. And I do think that kids have when they are, you know, brought up with some loving boundaries and all of those things, and they have some self-worth, they don't want to make stupid decisions.
Yeah, no, I agree. As long as they have the knowledge, right? As long as they really know what choices to make.
Exactly. And you have to be informed to be able to make choices. It's like informed consent, right?
And so respect your kids a little bit by, again, having the conversation.
Yeah.
Start it earlier than you would want to. Be honest, but don't glorify the drug use. I mean, you can't expect, if you sit down with your kids and tell them, oh my God, I could tell you stories for days and days about all my weed
adventures. No, let's not do
that.
That's
a bad idea. and then be the person they can actually come to,
mm-hmm.
and not shame them and not sort of wag the finger at them if they had a bad experience or they did something quote unquote wrong and they want to come to you. Be supportive.
Yeah. Help them look at how they could do it differently next time, or why they want to do it differently next time. You get them thinking about it for themselves.
Absolutely.
So thank you for having this discussion with us. How do we find you? What would you like us to find?
Twitter or Instagram or all those kinds of things. LADOCJ, DOCJ. And Addiction Alternatives at the Treatment Center. Other than that, I don't know. I'm not giving my cell phone number.
Damn it. Okay, you can like Sophie Venable on Facebook, please do, or tweet me at Sophie_Venable. My book, MILF 101, is available in paperback or in Kindle, iBooks and Nook too. You can follow me on Instagram now at Make Your Life Fabulous. And thank you, Adi, so much for being here. And thank you all for listening. This is Sophie Venable reminding you that you don't have to make your life perfect. Just go make it fabulous.